Working Class Radio Experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left, rich and a farm red. My father's son left a cameo, blue denim, had his vein. He's a working class man.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. So as I said in the last segment, the hat trick of horrible is banging around the General Assembly here in Pennsylvania. And it's not new. I mean, this is the same kind of stuff that's gone on in other states to attempt to push the no rights at work agenda. And on the workers' compensation front, certainly not an issue that compares with what's going on our southern border. But it's still one of these issues that every working person in the Commonwealth and every person across the country should most certainly care about. And that's why I've asked John Frommer to come talk with us. He's a partner with Frommer D'Amico, law firm here in Pennsylvania. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me. I enjoy your show.
Thanks so much. I'm looking at this again, the horrible never seems to go away. The bad ideas that the Scott Wagners and the Terzis and their ilk keep pushing never seem to go away. But there are three right now that are rather horrible going on right now, right?
There is actually four, but the three that are the biggies are going on right now. We removed one, probably the biggest threat, through a close vote and a thankful veto by Governor Wolf back on April 27. So the drug formulary game was taken off the table by Governor Wolf through a veto. That's not going to go away. That's going to stick around for another election cycle. So not to make any comments on election cycles, but we may want to keep Governor Wolf in office if you've got an interest in avoiding the insurance companies taking over your prescription drug formularies.
Well, as I've been saying, look, come November, if Wolf isn't reelected, bad things will happen, and this could be one of them. But explain what this is. I mean, because this is one of these issues that, I love to chide my right-wing friends of keep the government between me and my doctor. This is one of those weird little scenarios that puts bad policy right between me and my doctor.
Well, I think you're right. My take on the drug formulary proposal legislation that was vetoed by Governor Wolf back in April was that it was an opportunity seized by those that saw the opportunity as a result of the opioid crisis. And I am certainly not here to play down the opioid crisis. We've got a national problem on our hands. There is movement by the federal government and all the states to address it. But workers' compensation and injured workers are a small, tiny fraction of the opioid crisis problem. That said, with the cover of the opioid crisis, what the legislature did with their proposal was to say, for the workers' compensation world, again, a small percentage, whose prescription drugs are covered by workers' compensation insurance, and whose prescriptions are dictated through the Workers' Compensation Act, the legislative act governing workers' comp, we're going to step in and say, hey, with this opioid crisis, one of the things we're going to do to try to fix the opioid crisis is to create a drug formulary, basically saying, here are the drugs that you, if you're injured at work, can get from your doctor. Now, you and your doctor your doctor doesn't get to decide which drugs he's going to prescribe or she's going to prescribe or why. They are going to be limited legislatively to a formula, a list of approved drugs. And from those approved drugs, they may approve them, and those are the drugs that workers' comp insurance will pay for. And if the doctor wants to depart from that list, he or she is going to need to show some really good reason, go through a lot of administrative gobbledygook to try to get you the drugs that your doctor feels you do need for your work injury. That was, from my perspective, just sheer opportunism. It was an opportunity to take the opioid crisis and seize on it as a way to, again, look for cost-cutting, benefit-cutting to the injured workers in the injured worker arena.
And that's what I was going to ask. You know, who comes up with this list? What's the criteria for the list?
Oh, my gosh. There are medical groups and insurance groups across the country that work together. There are other states that have passed these formulas. It's basically like going to a restaurant where there's only so many things on the menu. But the answer is that there are different origins for different formularies. Different states use different systems. But suffice it to say, Rick, that it's a set list of your doctor can choose from these things, and there are medications, not only opioids, but other medications that are going to be left off the list because the powers that be, not your doctor, decide they're not necessary. So in any event, that effort at pushing through formularies as a effort to address the opioid crisis, but really to reduce the cost for insurance companies, presumably for workers' comp coverage, failed as a result of Governor Wolf's veto in April. So that's item number one on the hit parade of your trifecta. It's right. No longer on the table, but let's not forget it's looming.
Right. So let me ask you, do we have House numbers? Do we have bill numbers? So when people call their representatives, they can go, no, we're not pushing this through. Stop this. Anything
like that? Senate Bill 1052 and House Bill 1840.
All righty. We'll make sure we get a note of that.
Senate Bill 936. Got it. Apologize for the mistake.
All right. We'll make sure we get that out. So let's move on. Now, there's some other bad stuff going on because it never seems to end. What's the next piece you got for us?
Well, it's all cost-cutting.
Oh, no, John, it's reform. We're reforming the system. We're taking money out of it so it works better.
It's reform. It's cost-cutting. So item number two on the hit parade is the reconstitution of the impairment rating evaluation guidelines. I could get into the thick of it.
Yeah, don't.
But suffice it to say that there was a tool available in the workers' compensation insurance company toolbox that enabled them to place a cap on the length of time that a seriously injured worker could receive wage loss benefits. They could ask for and receive an impairment rating evaluation from a doctor, from a group of doctors that do them. And if their work-related impairment was under a certain percentage, regardless of whether they could return to work, their wage loss benefits were capped or limited. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court a year ago, back in June of 2017, declared the entire section of the Workers' Compensation Act that had been amended back in 1996 to include this tool available to insurance companies. 96 was back in the Ridge administration, where you were dealing with major amendments to the Workers' Compensation Act in order to make Pennsylvania more business-friendly, a.k.a. reduce premiums for insurance companies.
A.k.a. screw workers.
Okay.
No, because I remember 96.
You're a straight talker. I'm not going to disagree.
Look, I remember 96. I remember this whole deform. I remember telling my union buddies, you got to be calling your representatives. This is a complete departure from the grand bargain that workers' compensation was.
Agreed.
That you would be taken care of in the time that you were injured so that you wouldn't have to sue your employer. But yet, here we are. You got a 500-week maximum at a time where the employer, you still can't go and sue them, but in 500 weeks was is about 9.5 years. You're SOL. You're out on the street, and your employer goes next.
So the legislature, when they wrote that legislation and passed it in 96 to enable for these impairment ratings, they made a boo-boo. They wrote into the legislation that these impairment ratings would be subject to the American Medical Association guidelines in any given year as the guidelines changed from the 96 guidelines to the 98 guidelines to the 2005 guidelines to the two. And so as the AMA's impairment rating guidelines changed, so too did the standard by which an injured worker would be deemed impaired and the percentage of impairment. And essentially what the Supreme Court said was that is an unconstitutional delegation of authority to decide how and when an injured worker's impairment is going to be by saying we're going to allow the AMA to decide what the standard's going to be. And what's going on, Rick, is the legislature, it was declared unconstitutional because you can't delegate that kind of authority. The legislature's got to do, they got to fix it. Here's the test, here's the standard, and it needs to stay the standard unless there's a legislative amendment. The legislature's going to go back, and they're in the process of going back and saying, all right, we're going to pick the 2016 AMA guideline, and that'll be it. And unless we amend the statute, that will be the basis for evaluating an injured worker and putting them back on a 500-week clock, and that'll fix the unconstitutional argument. And I think it's going to ultimately push through unless we get some election help, but that's out there. That's the IRE bill that's pending, and that is, bear with me as I look at it, it's... here we go.
You know, as you look for this, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know,
House
I go back
Bill 1840. I'm sorry. There you go.
You know,
that's the change in prots. Okay.
So I look at
this. Item number two on the trifecta.
Right. So I look at this, and I, you know, the first question that I come up with is, you know, who came up with 500 weeks, and how is that fair to someone who's injured? You know, I've known people throughout the years who their lives are upended, and I'm sorry, 9.5 years is not. Is not going to get you through to retirement. And in fact, you know, there are no cost of living adjustments on workers' compensation. So, you know, inflation erodes whatever payments you get. And you end up having someone who had the misfortune of going to work and being harmed on the job, then ending up in poverty in a couple of years, or the way this is in 9.5 years, left out in the cold, begging for Social Security or welfare.
Separate and aside from any legislative action pending, you hit the nail on the head. Your thinking, forward as it is head on. And I'll share with you that one of the biggest tragedies of Pennsylvania's Workers' Comp Act and many, many other states' workers, when workers' comp was passed, medical insurance was a spit in the bucket as an employee benefit. And today, when an injured worker is hurt at work, they may well have taken a lower-paying job in order to have family medical insurance coverage. Then they're hurt at work. They're not unionized, so they have no protection. Their job is not protected by a collective bargaining agreement. They're hurt at work. Their wife, their kids, themselves, covered by their work insurance package. They herniate a lumbar disc, tear a rotator cuff, blow out a knee. They end up at the age of 40 undergoing a surgery. And within a month or two or three in our at-will state, they receive, they're getting their workers' comp coverage, they're getting their two-thirds of their wage, and they're getting their work-related injury covered by workers' comp, but they receive notice from their employer, oh, your health insurance coverage is being terminated. If you wish to continue it, it will cost you $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month to continue on your health insurance, because health insurance isn't protected or covered by workers' comp. And they go under like the Titanic as a result of that kind of catastrophic loss.
Now, and I'm sure you see this stuff, these horrible scenarios all the time.
You know, the spouse dealing with diabetes who's insulin dependent, boom, no more health insurance for the injured worker while they're out on workers' comp. So that's not even... That's a legislative reform that I'm wishing to see someday, but I'm going to be holding my breath for that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. And the final, and the third, the third in the hat trick, what do we got?
The broke, the unemployed insurer, the uninsured employer guarantee fund. Quickly, a fund created by the Commonwealth to deal with the situation when the employer you're working for, oops,
doesn't have
any workers' comp insurance. They're violating the law, just like you and I would be violating the law when we fail to have auto insurance and are driving out there uninsured. They're required, employers are required to have workers' comp insurance, and your employer doesn't. Well, the state stepped in and said, okay, if that happens, through a funding mechanism where all the different insurance companies will pay a portion of their premiums into a fund so that if your employer happens to be a crook and doesn't have workers' comp insurance, you can turn to this fund and be covered by workers' comp through the state through a protective guarantee fund if you're injured at work, just like other people whose employers had insurance. The fund is broke, flat out broke.
It's been broke for a while.
It's been broke for a while, and there is nothing. Nothing moving forward. It's just not a priority.
Yeah, this is something I talked about a couple of years ago, and I'll ask the same question I asked then. You know, why is it when someone doesn't have this workers' comp protection, you know, why is it we don't lock them up and take all their assets and shut their business down?
Well, the answer is most employers who don't have workers' comp insurance are on the brink of going under anyway, generally speaking. They're fly-by-nighters. So the answer is we do and can, in some instances, seize assets if we could find them. But the solution was the right solution. Create a fund to provide insurance for injured workers who, through no fault of their own, are working for an irresponsible employer that doesn't have it. Have the insurance industry, through a combination of premiums, fund it. And there's some matching by the state. But it's broke, and there's no move to fix the funding. So right now, as it stands, when we have clients coming into us who have a serious work injury and an uninsured employer, we're telling them, you know, we'll take the case and we'll prosecute it, but hold on to your hat for the day you receive benefits, because it's going to be a while.
So what happens then? I mean, if someone, you're just out of luck? I mean, you get no care? What happens to these people if they're filing a claim, they truly believe their company was supposed to have it, and they don't? They're just out of luck?
Once they get broke enough, Rick, they can apply for and receive medical assistance.
Oh, gee.
You want to hear the truth? There you have it. They go on welfare while their comp claim is pending. Men and women with dignity, with pride, with jobs, working for an employer who didn't have comp insurance, go under and go on welfare to survive.
No, the good thing is we're business friendly, though, John.
Well, and I'm glad for it. Thank goodness.
Ugly, ugly stuff. So what do we do? Last question, you know, what do we do on this? Other than, in my opinion, and you don't have to say a word, November, you vote for Tom Wolf and John Fetterman. Make sure that at least we have that that firewall to ensure that the horrible that could pass gets vetoed. And, you know, maybe get rid of some of these Republicans who are pushing this poison. But outside of that, what should folks be doing?
I think one of the things I say, oftentimes too late, but on your show I can say it now, as difficult as it may seem and as difficult as it may be to budget, you've seen the commercial, Aflac, you can insure for a work injury or a disability. You can check pricing, you can look at the, but you can self-insure. And if you purchase the insurance, and I'm not in that industry, I'm not selling that industry, I'm just saying one thing you could do to avoid catastrophe would be to make sure you're looking where premiums are reasonable at disability coverage for your mortgage. This again, you got to look carefully at whether you're making the right economic decision, but there are private insurance options that are sometimes not all that expensive that can provide you with some measure of protection against the catastrophe. The other thing you can do is make doggone sure you're not working for an uninsured employer. I mean, that should be, if you're engaged in employment with somebody that seems kind of shaky, you know, take some personal responsibility, ask some questions, have the guts to say, can I, you know, I don't want to say see the, but those are some practical tips.
Is there a way to check through the state to find out if your employer is,
yes,
is covered?
Absolutely. You can go on the State Department of Labor and Industry website, can tell you whether your employer has filed and obtained workers' compensation insurance.
That's probably the best way to go to make sure. And you're right, the other part of it is a little insurance never hurt anybody. But at the end of it, you know, the state should be making sure that people are protected. It's just crazy. John, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. You got a website you want to send people to?
It's My Comp Lawyers. My Comp Lawyers with an S is our website. If they have any problems, anything they need, just go to www.mycomplawyers.com. We're there to help.
Good stuff. John Fromer, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Rick, great show.
Good talking with you. Again, My Comp Lawyers, the website, we'll get a link out so people can take a look at it. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You and me, but we're not unarmed. A weapon solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood. The list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the worker.
War on the worker.
Oh, it's a war on the worker.
War on the worker.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.